we don't buy any more electricity from anyone that has, that gets it from coal. We have changed that. So we have sent a very clear signal to the rest of the country. Don't try to produce electricity for us and pollute the world. Just, you know, do it the clean way and we will buy electricity, even though we're always in need of electricity in California, as you remember the blackouts and the brownouts and all of those things. But we refuse to buy electricity from anyone that is producing electricity with regular coal.
That's the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, giving an opening address at Georgetown University on April the 11th, 2007. Here's the rest of the speech.
So I have to say that I'm somewhat amazed to be here. And the reason is because 3.5 years ago when I ran for governor, I was followed around by environmental protesters with signs that didn't like my Humvees and my Hummers and my SUVs or anything that I did. Some effort when I promised that I would improve the environment when I become governor, they didn't believe that either. So here we are, 3.5 years later, and I'm on the cover of Newsweek as one of the big environmentalists, only in America. That's all I can say. Now, I know this is an environmental conference, but I do want to start talking first about bodybuilding. And the reason is because bodybuilding, you know, is another passion of mine, and as you probably know, and it has similarities there. Bodybuilding used to have a very sketchy image. As a matter of fact, so much so that some people that worked out seriously and pumped weights didn't admit they were doing bodybuilding. As a matter of fact, in the old days, some of the very famous Hollywood actors like Kirk Douglas, Clint Eastwood, Charles Bronson, and the list goes on and on, they all worked out with weights, but they never admitted it publicly, because they didn't want to be associated with the gymnasiums that were like dungeons, and that had fanatics, and that had weird people training in there. That is the kind of an image that it had. But we changed that. We consciously changed that, and what we did was we came out with a book called Pumping Iron. I know a lot of you are familiar with that, especially the students. Then the movie Pumping Iron, and that changed the image of bodybuilding dramatically. As a matter of fact, the perception of bodybuilding began to change, and it became more and more hip and more attractive. And then all of a sudden, everyone wanted to exercise. As a matter of fact, today you can go to any place in the world and you will find a bodybuilding gymnasium or a place where you can do weight resistance training. And you can go into any gymnasium and you will find ordinary people talking about their abs, their lats, their deltoids, body fat, and all those kind of things. So this is how much it had changed. It became mainstream, it became sexy, attractive, and this is exactly what has to happen with the environmental movement. Like bodybuilders, environmentalists were thought of as kind of weird and fanatics also. You know, the kind of serious tree huggers. Environmentalists were no fun. They were like prohibitionists at the fraternity party. So someone the other day just showed me a cartoon that was of a car salesman in a showroom talking to this couple. And the car salesman pointed at the car and said, This car runs an ordinary gasoline-powered engine. And then when it feels a little guilt, when it senses guilt, it switches over to battery power. Now, it's funny, it's a cartoon, but let me tell you something, there's a lot of truth to that. For too long, the environmental movement had been powered by guilt. But I believe that this is about to switch over from being powered by guilt to being powered by something much more positive, something much more dynamic, something much more capable of bringing about major change. You know the kind of guilt I'm talking about, the smokestacks, belching, pollution that are powering our jacuzzis and our big screen TVs, and in my case, powering my private airplanes. So it is too bad, of course, that we can't all live as simple lives as the Buddhist monks in Tibet. But you know something, that's not going to happen. So ladies and gentlemen, I don't think that any movement has ever made it and has ever made much progress based on guilt. Guilt is passive, guilt is inhibiting, and guilt is defensive. You remember the commercials a number of years ago, the commercial specifically of a Native American who sees what we have done to the environment and then a tear runs down his cheek. You all remember that? Well, let me tell you something. That approach didn't work. Because successful movements are built on passion. They're not built on guilt. They're built on passion. They're built on confidence. And they're built on critical mass. And often they're built on an element of alarm that galvanizes action. The environmental movement is, to use a popular term, about the tipping point. It's about to get to the tipping point. There's a tipping point, and I believe the tipping point will be occurring when the environmental movement is no longer seen as a nag or as a scold, but as a positive force in people's lives. Now, I don't know when that tipping point occurs, but I know where. In California. In California, we are doing everything that we can to tip the balance on the environment. Now, first, let me start with government policy. Now, I don't want to go into all the initiatives that we have passed and all the laws that we have passed, because that was already eloquently explained by John when he introduced me. But there's two things that stick out that has gotten us the most attention. One, we passed a law to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 25% by the year 2020. And then that basically means we're rolling back the greenhouse gases to the 1990 level by the year 2020. And then we go 80% below that by the year 2050. And two, I ordered a 10% cut in the carbon content of transportation fuels. Now, do I believe that the standards that California sets will solve global warming? No, of course not. But what we are doing is applying leverage so that at some point the whole environmental thing tips. That's what we are trying to do. It's like a seesaw. You walk up to it, and then slowly it tips the other way. That is what we are trying to do. California, as you know, is big. California is powerful. And what we do in California has unbelievable impact, and it has consequences. As a matter of fact, when you look at the globe, California is a little spot. But the kind of power of influence that we have on the rest of the world is an equivalent of a whole huge continent. We are sending the world a message. What we are saying is that we are going to change the dynamic on greenhouse gas and on carbon emissions. We are taking actions ourselves. We are not waiting for anyone. We are not waiting for the federal government or for Washington. We are creating our own partnerships. We are partnering with Great Britain. We are partnering with provinces in Canada, with states in the United States, with the western states, with the northeastern states. And you know something? Every year, we are adding more and more partners to our team. We are increasing the momentum for change. Now, there's a billboard in Michigan that accuses me of costing the car industry $85 billion. They say because of our new carbon fuel standards. I cost them $85 billion. The billboard says, Arnold to Michigan, drop dead. The fact of the matter is, what I'm saying is, Arnold to Michigan, get off your butt. Get off your butt and join us. In fact, California may be doing more to save U.S. automakers than anyone else, because what we are doing is we're pushing them to make changes, to make the changes so they can sell their cars in California. And we all know, let's be honest, that if they don't change, someone will. The Japanese will, the Chinese will, the South Koreans will, the Germans will, they all will. So what I want to do is I want to prevent that from happening. I want them to sell the cars in California. I believe strongly in American technology, and I think in the end it will be technology that will ultimately save Detroit. Now, California, for instance, has already a car company. It's called Tesla Motors. Tesla Motors has just designed and produced a car. It's called the Tesla Roadster. It's 100% electric. Now, why is it that a car company that has never produced a car before is already producing a car with zero emissions? Zero emissions, and Detroit is still lagging behind. Now, this car, let me tell you something, is a very sexy-looking car. It's really cool. I mean, I test drove it. It goes from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. It drives 130 miles an hour, and it drives 250 miles on a charge, and then the recharging only takes 3.5 hours. Now, that's what I call cool. And the car costs $100,000, to be exact, $98,000. And it is so popular, it sold out immediately, that now the second version is being produced, and that car, the cost would drop down to $50,000. So we can see where this is heading. Economics tells us where this is heading. It's like the cell phones. I remember when I bought a cell phone, the first cell phone, which was kind of a radio phone, 20 years ago. It was $1,600. The next version I bought a few years later was $1,200, and the next one was $750. I just recently bought a cell phone for my daughter, and it was below $90. Now, because of the costs that have dropped down, almost everyone can afford a cell phone. And the same thing is going to happen to the environmental technologies in cars. Now, government can give a push by setting standards. So California is giving the nation and the world a push. Now, beyond government policy, the second tipping factor is economic. California is the leading edge of what I call the environmental economy. The aerospace industry built the modern economy of Southern California. The computer industry and the internet built the economy of Silicon Valley. And now the green, clean technology, along with biotech, will be the next wave of California's economy. Right now in California's university labs, corporate research parks, even in plain-looking offices and in strip malls, something very exciting is happening. Something very exciting. The nation's brightest scientists and the smartest venture capitalists are all racing to find alternative or new technologies for alternative energy. It is a race that is fueled by billions and billions of dollars. Capitalism, interestingly enough, which was the alleged enemy of the environment, is today giving new life to the environmental movement. Daniel Yergin, the famous oil analyst, says that if this all-out activity continues, expect dramatic results. And the head of PG&E, California's largest utility, says that the energy industry is on the brink of a revolution. And you know something is up when General Electric says that it's selling its plastic business because it sees more potential in growth and profits in environmental goods and services. In an environmental economy, the great thing is that we can do both. We can protect the environment and protect the economy. And that's what I've been saying for years. Of course, people didn't believe in it. People said that you have to choose between one or the other. You have to choose between the environment and the economy. And I said, no, we can do both. We can protect the economy and protect the environment. And we have proven that in California. Now, the third tipping point that I want to mention is the attitude of the people. I believe the environmental movement is in the midst of redefining itself as something more modern, more confident, and more positive. As governor, I talk to scientists in our universities. I talk to CEOs that run major corporations. And let me tell you, these are not wacky people. Mainstream scientists are convinced, mainstream CEOs are convinced, and if you look at the surveys, mainstream Americans are convinced that global warming and climate change is real and we have to do something about it. So who are the fanatics now? Who are the fanatics? They are the ones who are in denial. They're in environmental denial, they're in economic denial, and they're in political denial. Who are the fanatics when DuPont has hired the former head of Greenpeace International? Who are the fanatics when major companies are now demanding that the federal government once and for all passes new laws to set standards for greenhouse gas emissions? Major companies like DuPont, GE, Walmart, BP, and PG&E believe that the climate change is real. That is the mainstream speaking. That is the establishment speaking. Now, some of you have maybe seen the cable TV show called Pimp My Ride. Have you seen that? Maybe not. Maybe not everyone has seen it. But the fact of the matter is, it's a real cool show. It's a real cool show. And what they do is, they take old junk cars that we normally should crush, and they make them into lowriders, and they make them into muscle cars. Now, my teenage son watches that show all the time, and sometimes I watch it with him. As a matter of fact, I recently did a segment of that show that would air on Earth Day. And the reason why we would air on Earth Day is because we took this cool show and we did something and added something that was environmentally hip. Here's what we did. We took the 1965 Impala and we made it into a lowrider, but not an ordinary lowrider. We dropped in an 800-horsepower engine. And an 800 horsepower engine goes from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. Now, you know how fast that is, in 3 seconds. But it is biofueled. And that means that it emits 50% less greenhouse gases, and it goes twice as far. Now, that's what I call cool. You see, now we cut down on the greenhouse gas emissions. So we don't have to really go and take away the muscle cars. We don't have to take away the Hummers or the SUVs or anything like this, because that's a formula for failure. Instead, what we have to do is make those cars more environmentally muscular. That is what we have to do. Now, because of that, one of my Hummers now is running on biofuel, and another one of my Hummers is now running on hydrogen. So those are the kind of changes that we've made instead of getting rid of the Hummers. So the new environmental movement is not about guilt, it's not about fringe, and it's not about being overwhelmed by the enormity of the problem, but it is about mainstream momentum. Exactly what I talked about earlier with bodybuilding. We have to make it mainstream. We have to make it sexy. We have to make it attractive so that everyone wants to participate. So finally, let me just say something about politics, what politics plays, and the politics plays a big part in a tipping point here. If you are against taking action on greenhouse gases and carbon emissions, your political base will melt away as surely as the polar ice caps. I can guarantee you that. You will become a political penguin on a smaller and smaller ice floe that is drifting out to sea. Goodbye, my little friend. That's what's going to happen. Because the environment is a public value, and politicians who ignore it are doing so at their own peril. Now, privately, I know many politicians have come up to me and said, how can we do what you're doing in California? And I tell them there's only two words that I have to mention. This is mandates and markets. Mandates and markets, like we have in California. And then I also add, I said, and you have to have political courage. I said, just remember that political courage is not political suicide. Now, some of my fellow Republicans, of course, are raising a very valid point. They say, what good does it do if we do all of those great things for the environment? And in the meantime, the developing world, where emissions are growing the fastest, doesn't do anything. Now, I believe in free trade, and I believe that it lifts everyone's standard of living. But eventually, we will look at the countries that produce goods without regard to the environment the same way as we look at countries that produce goods without regard to human rights. And that means those countries, of course, that I'm talking about are the ones that have sweatshops. My guess is that within the next decade or so, if an economy ignores the damage that it's doing to the environment, the civilized world will impose environmental tariffs, duties, and other trade restrictions to those countries. This is a matter of fair trade. Nations cannot dump products. Nations cannot dump anything. And in the future, they will not be able to dump carbon or greenhouse gases either, because this is unfair trade advantage. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in closing, let me just say that there's still a lot of people that are pessimistic about how we're going to deal with the environmental problems. I am optimistic, but I'm always optimistic. But in this case, I'm very optimistic. And the reason is because I feel things tipping. I feel things tipping. I feel things moving forward. As a matter of fact, I say, do not be downhearted about the environment, because things are about to tip our way. Look what has happened this last month. A documentary about global warming has won the Oscar. You can today open up any newspaper and they're talking about global warming and how we all can participate. Any television show, any radio show you can turn on, they're going to talk about global warming and about the greenhouse gas emissions and green technology and so on. The day I went to a magazine store, and in the magazine store, I saw eight covers, as a matter of fact, it was nine. I found another one just an hour ago. Nine magazine covers, all talking about green technology, about plug-in cars, and about Mother Earth, and about the town and country has a green issue, and it goes on and on and on, including, of course, let's not forget the best issue of all, Newsweek. You all saw that, right? So basically what I'm saying is things are tipping our way. Thank you very much for listening. I very appreciate you being here. Thank you very much.
That was Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger speaking at Georgetown University on April 11, 2007, on climate, California, and energy.